What is going on with Zac Efron's face? OMG. In a video promoting Bill Nye's new environmental awareness project, Earth Day, the musical, fans were left gasping when Zac appeared in the video looking like he had botched plastic surgery. I'm gonna need more lip gloss to gloss these lips.
Today we dig in deep to find out what happened to Zac Efron's face and so much delicious pop culture goodies. Was the 2021 Academy Awards the most boring Oscars ever? Whatever happened to the worst dress list?
The new documentary Street Gang, How We Got to Sesame Street, opens in theaters.
The average size for dongs is shrinking around the world.
And Ricky Martin is living La Vida Santa with his new gray beard. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. She bangs. Oh, crazy. Santa Claus, Ricky Martin. I am not ready for that.
The gray beard. You were surprised, huh?
I was like, oh my God, we're all aging. What is happening? Ah!
I never knew that Puerto
Ricans. Everybody except me.
I never knew that Puerto Ricans could ever have gray beards. I thought they all dyed them black. Like you.
I was like, it's like there's about like 40 gay men outside of Ricky Martin's home being like, we had an agreement. You need to dye your beard black.
You cannot grow old. You must stay young forever, like Zac Efron.
El Zaco.
So how do you like the Ricky Martin look? So those photos are around for us, Schön magazine, which is, you know, Schön is beautiful in German.
You know, the thing about Ricky Martin is he next to, and I'm Puerto Rican and super gay. And for a while, I was the world's most famous openly gay Puerto Rican man. I know that sounds crazy,
and
but
when
it was
came
true.
Out, the Tribune called you and said,
the Chicago
as the
Tribune.
World's most famous out gay Puerto Rican man, how do you feel about Ricky Martin coming out? And you're like, girl, we all knew forever. Come on.
There is a when Ricky Martin did come out, this is not a joke, the Chicago Tribune did interview me about it. And I was like, cool. We've all known he's gay for years. Mm-hmm. But because, you know, Puerto Rico is a small community in some ways. And Ricky Martin has been known, you know, he goes out to the clubs, you know, like.
Oh, he's clubbing?
He's out to the clubs. but, you know, and so, you know, I would say, like, in terms of decisions that he makes and choices, he has the heart and soul of Puerto Rico beating strong, fierce, and deep. And this is somebody who, you know, for a while was in the closet. He was campaigning for George W. Bush.
Well, he performed, right?
Well, performing is campaigning. Mm-hmm. And he was paid to accept that check. And, you know, I think in recent years, he's really done an amazing job at undoing a lot of the harm that he may have directly or inadvertently caused. And embraced progressive causes and really try to push Puerto Rico into a new consciousness that includes LGBTQ people.
Yeah, he was part of the revolution down there, huh?
Yeah, he was on a truck with a rainbow and a Puerto Rican flag, waving it and shaking his bonbon. So, you know, everybody's like, loves Ricky Martin and he can do no wrong. And at the same time,
did really change because there was a lot of people that kind of like when he was in the closet, there was a lot of contempt for him, right?
Yeah. I mean, when he came out, he got a book deal. He got Oprah Winfrey talking to him. You know, he was like, you know, the way
that Colton Underwood of his day,
the Colton Underwood. Well, it's more like Meghan, Prince Harry's wife.
Yeah. Right.
What's her last
name? Meghan Markle. Windsor Mountbattan.
But like, you know, like a lot of people, especially like black Americans are like, girl, what did you think you were going to get into? If you marrying the Prince of England, oh, you discovered racism all of a sudden. So, you know, there's not a lot of sympathy for her and there was not a lot of sympathy for Ricky Martin. He famously was asked point blank by Barbara Walters, are you gay? Barbara Walters says she regrets doing that.
Yeah, she feels like she ruined his career. And the book Audition, I think she wrote about that, right?
She talked about it.
He was just like, I don't know what to say to that.
He's like, please.
Well, he's just seeing his bank account go dwindling as these things happen. Because those songs that he did at that point in time, right before then, were so amazingly big.
They were monster hits. Yeah. And, you know, I can't think of probably at this point now, a gay musician who's had such worldwide success. Because, you know, you can be famous in the United States And you can be famous in South America and Central America and Europe and Asia and Russia and Europe. And he was just like a worldwide sensation with that Livin' La Vida Loca and, you know, all those songs that were being used for soccer games and stuff like that. So he, in his heyday, he was a huge star and still is to this day. So then, you know, a young queer, openly queer performer called Lil Nas X lap dance with the devil, and Ricky Martin's people paid attention and said, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And they dragged up Ricky Martin and put him in a bunch of like very kind of wild club draggy kind of gear. He's wearing a little bit of makeup now. And he's
sporting he was wearing makeup before. You just didn't notice.
Well, yeah, he's wearing eyeshadow.
Oh,
he's wearing lipstick.
Was he wearing man lashes?
Oh, my God. Man lashes.
Man lashes.
So we were walking down in Lakeview, the gay neighborhood in Chicago, and we saw the sign on a like a rejuvenation.
Well, it's like a clinic. Beauty shop, you know, esthetician place where they probably do nails and, you know, facials and all that kind of stuff. And then they were like, lash lengthening. What are the little signs?
So there's an ad and it has a man smiling.
With a nice,
that looks a little bit like Zach. He looks like Zac Efron, you know, with the plastic surgery. Or we don't know. We're going to get to that in a second. But so it says, men lash lift. Lashes have no gender. Lash lift for men are becoming the hot new thing. For the longest time, men getting lashes and extensions or modifications were a thing of taboo in the cooperate world. So it's, yeah,
it doesn't say cooperate.
Cooperate
world, but the cooperate world. Yeah.
So if you're a busy CEO and you want to flirt with the other just employees, get
some lengthening. But you know, for some guys, some people they just don't have lashes, you know, or they have little tiny lashes, and so they, you know, or they're different colors. So for some people, they want to correct that. Or in
I'll tell you what. Like if I. I'm being scolded by, you know, what is it, 50 Shades of Grey CEO, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I want him to have the most beautiful lashes.
Do you ever wear mascara as a boy?
I used to wear a lot of makeup. And,
as a boy?
You know, in and out of whatever gender identity I was presenting.
Okay.
I mean, throughout the course of my life, you know, I'm 33 years old. Okay, I'm 49. Oh, my God. And I'm younger than Ricky Martin, too.
You are?
Yeah, he's, well, according to his Wikipedia entry, and according to my Wikipedia
entry. So I think he's older than
you. He is older than me. He's my sister's age.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so.
My sister is 4 years older than me. Mm-hmm. And listen, I hope I look as good as Ricky Martin 4 years from now.
Well, because you had the microblading on your eyebrows done from Kate from Teen Mom OG. And
on MTV, not VH1. Not VH1. Don't get it twisted.
But I think they replay it on the Paramount Network too now, don't they?
Yeah, every time that episode airs, somebody takes a picture of it and sends it to me.
I think you should write to Kate because you need another appointment for that microblading and see if she's doing like these eyelash lifts.
Yeah, I would look like Bambi. I love flowers. And, you know, so for me, it's like I've been very gender nonconforming my entire life. And it is interesting to see like the things that were associated being a sissy are now considered kind of masculine.
Well, and vice versa. Men have been wearing makeup historically for, you know, forever. Yeah. But even, you know, when I first moved to Chicago, I worked with a guy and he said he sold makeup at the makeup counter. And he was talking about the guys. I'm like, oh, guys, you know, because I was young. I didn't need much makeup back then. I'm like, oh, you guys sell it to like guys like drag queens? He's like, no, just guys that want foundation and some powder. And I said, really? What kind of guys is it? Like, you know, and they're just like, you know, guys like in their 40s that just want to look a little bit better.
Well, MAC Cosmetics in the early 90s, they were they hired RuPaul and they were catering and marketing to gay men or men in general who wanted to put on a little makeup to look their best. And I remember like us going to a lot of like podcasting and media expos, and you know, when we would do public appearances and speak, we would drag it up. In fact, when we taped Cooking with Drag Queens, for example, Mark and I are wearing about as much makeup as the drag queens. It just isn't designed to look like stage makeup or drag makeup.
When we're doing the boys, like we have a couple of that are in the can that are coming out very shortly. And those were in drag for.
Yeah, actually. Well, but in terms of when we're
presenting,
regardless of the gender presentation or the costume, we are always wearing a lot of makeup and people are always like, you don't look like your pictures in person. And I'm like, darling, it's Maybelline. Maybe it's Photoshop.
I don't wear a whole lot of makeup.
I'm not wearing any makeup right now, but yeah. There are times when I want to. There are times when I want to look real good, you know. It's like, and if I had Zac Efron's money, I would consider getting Botox and plumping and all that shit, you know. But it's like, for me, it's like that is a rich man's game, and I'm a podcaster.
Well, you know, there's it all depends on what your priorities are, right? You know, do you want to pay your rent, or do you want to get Botox? That kind of thing.
Or do you want to be a sex worker, or do you want to get Botox? Do you want to, like, eat, or do you want to get Botox? Like, you have to make sacrifices to look this good. And so, you know, we chatted with the scientists at Anacin, and they said, Patricia Neal, we've been out of business for 30 years. Why do you keep calling us?
Man, aren't you dead?
Yeah. Didn't you die?
Yeah. No, what are the scientists at Anacin?
So Justin Jedlicka, the scientist at Anacin,
the human Ken doll,
our in-house expert on plastic surgery, said he doesn't know if Zac Efron has had work done, but it certainly looks like that from the video where he was making a guest appearance briefly in Bill Nye's Environmental Awareness Project, Earth Day the Musical. And I looked at it and I said, you know, he looks like Jocelyn Wildenstein, the cat lady from New York City.
Right.
I mean, I
have a t-shirt with her face on it.
He's on his way. And so, you know, for those of us who sort of rediscovered his sexuality, and I think especially for gay men and just men in general, it's hard for us to embrace our beauty as we age. I think that's true for all Americans and all genders too. You know, and so it was really kind of fun to see him with his daddy on Down to Earth on the Netflix documentary series.
His guru, his podcasting guru.
And that's not us. And
could be, Zach, could be. If you're lucky.
Call me playa. But so it was nice to see him, you know, sport his dad bod and, you know, have
dad
a more.
That's what people call you, have a dad bod. Like, he's muscular and trim.
Compared to what he was in shape for Baywatch.
Okay.
You know, he was closer to what the physique that you and I have.
And he says that he would never, ever have that body that he had for Baywatch. Again, he's like in that Down to Earth. He was just like, it's just so, insane. I think he described what he had to go through for that, to have that physique.
What is it like with bodybuilding that people think that it's like has to happen all the fucking time? Even these celebrities, they're like when I see somebody who's really shredded or cut, I'm thinking probably that was, you know, a brief week or two in the last year.
Yeah.
I'm not assuming but, they look know, like that all the time.
It's getting to that point. It's the 3 or 4 weeks, the 2 months beforehand too. You know, it's not just, oh, it's just that 1 week you look like that. It's summits, right? You have to get to one summit and you reach that level and then you reach another level and finally you get to that peak.
Have you ever tried like intentionally like cutting? Like,
do I look like I've ever tried intentionally cutting?
As someone said about Henry Cavill, she likes to eat.
Listen, at one point in time when I came back from Europe, I was 155 pounds.
Damn.
You know.
How much do you weigh now?
I'm, you know, the upper 220s.
That's good.
Maybe into the 30s.
And so, yeah, same here. And for me, it's like, you know, I want to be happy and I also want to be healthy and I want to look good. I also want to set a good example for myself and for other people. And, you know, at the same time, I'm a ruthless bitch. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to look fierce and fabulous. I'm a drag queen.
Well, why don't you do it?
Because it's work. and I don't know how to do it. And part of it is like when I started like calculating calories of food, it was easy to do that when you had like scrambled eggs and potatoes and, you know, like, but when you make like a casserole or a lasagna, you're like, I don't know what's the caloric breakdown of this? It's really hard. It gets more complicated. So one of the things I'm thinking about doing is having a startup fitness podcast that's specifically tailored to LGBTQ people that kind of examines a lot of these ideas more in depth than we normally do on the show.
And with our kind of sense of humor involved in it. Because, you know, a lot of these fitness videos, they're just so serious about this stuff and they're so dry. And, you know, some people are very scientific and it's all about, you got to put that hard work in. And it was like, well, yeah, of course you have to put that hard work in, but do you have to make it so draconian and not maybe dragonian?
Relax. Just breathe, baby.
You know, that kind of stuff. So Zach's face.
Does he have Botox? Yes or no?
Well, we don't know. I think that a lot of celebrities do have Botox, right? He's early 30s. He's probably started Botoxing because they're like, do it now to prevent it. I got Botox once. I got 20 cc's.
You got a gift certificate?
I got a gift certificate for it. And, you know, I like the results. And when I'm a little flush with cash, I'm going to go back and I'm going to get some more because these little 11s, as they call it. But, you know, they went away when I got the Botox. So
I do appreciate getting Botox gift certificates. Mm-hmm. And so when Mark and I got them, the woman who was there, she was like a Melania Trump kind of, you know, fembot from Russia. And she was like, you must have twice as much Botox to undo the damage that life has done on your face.
Really?
Yeah, she was tough.
She was not like that to me. To me, she's like, are you European? Your skin is so good.
No, I think she thought that I was like 50 Shades of Grey kind of bottoming for her. You know.
Oh.
She was like, well, you know, what is the plot of 50 Shades of Grey? It's basically this woman gets a job at a corporation and she has sex with the CEO.
Yes. And he beats her, ties her up.
And she likes it.
Yes.
It's consensual.
Yes.
And so she unlocks a level of sexuality in basically giving in to sexual harassment in the workplace.
And it was originally Twilight fan fiction.
Oh, God.
But because the person who wrote it, she couldn't capitalize on that. So she just changed the vampire to a CEO and Bella became the secretary.
And for a short time, suburban women were buying sadomasochistic stuff at Target.
Mm-hmm. And honey, they still are.
And bringing it home to their husbands, and their husbands like, Lucy, you got some explaining to do.
So probably Botox. He's probably had, you know, a little peel or at least like some exfoliation, that kind of stuff. And, you know, for guys, if he had like maybe, facial wasting or anything like that, or if he had like his face was sagging, maybe he lost some weight or had, maybe he's taking a medication where he's losing the fat in his face. So they're like, plump it up, or maybe he's trying to be 18 again. But the thing is,
which was one of his movies.
Oh my God, you're right.
Yeah,
it is, right?
Yes.
And so, I forgot about that. Maybe it was subconsciously in my
18
head.
Again. 18 Zac again. Zac Efron.
And so that may have been the case. Maybe he got stung by bees. Well, we don't know. But, you know, for guys,
you know, he is into that kind of like bee therapy.
Mm-hmm. It could be maybe he ate shellfish. And he's allergic to it.
We don't know what happened to him. Yeah. And a lot of people are like, you know, kind of like you may be giggling now. But like people were also giggling when Chadwick Boseman, Black Panther, came. There were photos of him on the Internet and he died at the age of 43 from colon cancer.
Mm.
So he may have health issues right now. We don't know what's going on. So, you know, but part of it is, I think, you know, with Hollywood is that there is a lot of highs and lows, a lot of unrealistic expectations that we place upon ourselves because we see these movies and we're dazzled by their beauty and we want to inhibit that beauty.
And we want to just stay and keep looking at that beauty. Didn't The Weeknd do some kind of thing? He used a filter to make it look like he had weird plastic surgery. And everybody's like, what happened to you? Oh my God.
And I'm like, I'm trying to get my Snapchat filter to do the pillow face.
Oh, is that what it's called?
I can't get it to work. So I'm like, I guess I just have to use my lips to just plump them up normally.
Oh my God. If you guys haven't seen one of our videos, the insane beauty treatments, it's
extreme beauty treatments.
And you can see it on our YouTube channel. I was back in the day when we used to make short little films with Victoria Lamar. May she rest in peace. And Victoria and Saltina Faustina.
That's me.
Decided that Daphne Dumont wasn't doing enough to enhance her beauty. So they were going to treat her to a beauty regimen that goes a little south.
Yeah, but we use a drill bits. We're like asking our friends, like, give us a bunch of fucked up shit to use as props. So it's very Three Stooges, yeah. You know.
And my favorite is you injecting the lime jello into your lips.
And people are like, how did you do that? I was like, we made prosthetic lips.
We took jello. So we took jello and put it into a syringe and acted like we were going to inject it into our thing. And but then we actually made the prosthetic lips out of Nox gelatin, right?
Yeah, actual gelatin.
Alex, yeah, gelatin. And it's not something that sticks on for a long time, you know, because your lips
moved.
But it worked for that short period of time, yes.
Yeah, and so it does look like we've had, like, you know, trout mouth.
Yeah.
Or pillow face. For a hot minute.
And I have to say, I think my makeup skills were pretty good with doing, like, the abrasions.
Now, do you think that people have created kind of this double standard because, like, nobody said anything when Alaska, Thunderfuck, or Bianca, or Willem, or Sharon Needles, or any of these Rue girls who get flush with cash and they get work done on their face?
Oh, my God. People all talk about their
not really. They just go, oh, you look so fierce, girl, you know? Whereas with Zac Efron, they're like, oh my God.
Zac Efron's a major Hollywood star.
Yeah. So maybe the people. Well, and Chadwick Boseman was kind of a similar thing.
Yeah.
But, well,
you know, you have to be careful when you talk about people and their looks and their bodies and stuff, because we don't know what's happening. You know, it's not your business what's happening in some instances. With Zach, you know, he's kind of like this icon of male beauty. And so when you see, like, because it looks like he had, like, plumping done. And so you're like, why, Zach? Why?
And we don't know if he's just, like, you know, pranking us and trying to get us to talk about Earth Day the musical.
Listen, I love the planet Earth. It's my favorite planet in all of the universes.
I'm a little partial to Uranus.
Mm-hmm. Watch out for those Klingons. But, you know, we're obsessed with celebrities and how they look. You know, the Oscars just happened and everybody's, you know, we don't really have the worst dress list anymore, but we're all kind of like going with Halle Berry's hair. Like, what happened to that hair?
She looked like the Melon Cat. The Melon Cat.
To the Melon Cat.
So it's this meme that somebody cut a wig into a little honeydew melon and plopped it on their cat's head. Took a picture of it, and it looks just like Halle Berry. And, you know, that's part of the thing about what I've always liked.
To a melon cat.
Melon cat. The thing I've always liked about the Oscars is I'm a big fan of fashion off the rails. Mm-hmm. When people spend a lot of money with very little taste or misguided direction, like, you know, Ricky Martin's drag today, I think has a little bit of that in there, where he's just like, he's just throwing
campy,
money
though, right?
at the lens just to see what happens. And, you know, Ricky Martin can do no wrong. And with a lot of these celebrities is kind of the same thing. And so it's really fun to see, like, the world have kind of a shock and awe, to sort of be dazzled by the weirdness of bad fashion or extreme fashion, you know, like the way that people are so furious and get so their panties in a bunch over Billy Porter's red carpet looks. And they're like, why can't he be normal like Lady Gaga?
It's too much. No, but other people celebrate and they're like, you're breaking down those gender barriers, and it's fantastic. But, you know, I think with the celebrities in this red carpet, nobody wants to take a wild chance anymore. Everything's just kind of like, this is nice, this will be fine, I like this. You know, I think most people like Regina King's beautiful butterfly dress, that kind of thing. I was kind of hoping because, you know, it has like these wings at her front. You know, it's almost like a little collar.
It was beautiful. I actually thought that was a beautiful dress.
Absolutely beautiful. I was kind of hoping the back would flip up and then it would be like one of those like dinosaurs that spits venom at like Newman.
That would be really cute.
Wouldn't that have been cute if she had done that? Next year, Regina.
Call me, girl. I got lots of
Regina
ideas.
Regina or Regina?
Regina. Yeah. That's what I call it, Regina King.
Regina King.
Regina, and, girl, your fashion is fierce. However, it can be fiercer.
And then for the man, Coleman Domingo looked fantastic in that pink outfit. Pink is in for men.
Yeah, pink is always in. Mm-hmm. So the thing about it, like 9.8 million people watch the Oscars.
Yeah.
Which is like down almost 60% from the last year.
Oh, really?
It's the record low in the history of the podcast.
I think for a lot of
broadcast.
Yeah. We used to always do a podcast just on the Oscars and we'd watch them and report on, but it's just like the Oscars have kind of changed over the years, but definitely this year it has really changed because of COVID. And it's almost a return to like the olden days when the celebrities would sit at these tables and they would film that in a hotel, in a ballroom.
I just want to thank the Academy for this distinguished honor. And to Christina and Christopher, and you know, all a good night. Joan Crawford, she accepted the her Academy Award from her home.
Mm-hmm. In bed, right?
In bed. And, you know, like, I kind of wish that, like, if they are going to go back to the original old school OG style, original gangster style, it would be really fun if they got celebrities in their jacuzzis or beds or, you know.
Mm.
Accepting the award. Because, you know, what was the woman who played Camilla Parker Bowles? She won an Oscar. And she stood up on the stage. And I'm just like, she was like, I didn't think I was going to win, so I didn't prepare a speech. Oh, my God, this thing's so heavy. Steven Soderbergh's going to be so mad at me. I just want to thank the Academy and everybody that I work with. Thanks. Have a good night. Yeah, peace out.
Boo. I didn't get to watch a whole lot of it because I was at home visiting family, and my mom's not doing too well, so I was spending some time with her, and we were watching some other stuff because she hasn't seen any of the movies. So she loves the Oscars, but she's like, let's just watch something else. And I think, you know, with people not going to the theater this past year, it took a lot of that energy from it. You know, mm-hmm. people weren't rooting for it. Of course, you're watching stuff on streaming, but you know, going to the theater, it's a community event, and the Oscars is a community event, and so you're missing that kind of thing. And you know,
it's a zeitgeist. Yeah, it's about like what are we talking about as a society, mm-hmm. where we want to be.
Yeah,
and I think that's been the hardest thing about the pandemic. And part of it is, you know, I think regressive people want to harm it. There's this weird kind of jealousy and you know, malevolence that some people have, where even if it hurts them, they're okay with it because it hurts people they hate, mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they're willing to take a loss or a damage to themselves if it knows that it hurts somebody they're bigoted or prejudiced against.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, certainly Republicans politicizing the COVID pandemic and refusing to wear masks all throughout this pandemic and stretching it out unnecessarily. And thank God, you know, we've gotten leadership under Joe Biden. And you know, he's turning out to be a lot more progressive than we expected him to.
Not according to Lady Bunny.
Lady Bunny, you know, she's rejecting Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders now. So I don't know where she fits on the political spectrum,
But you know, back to the movies though, is you know, Fausto Night Tonight, we went to the movies for the first time since, gosh, what was the last movie we saw last year? February? Was it March, maybe?
I think it was a documentary, but I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Because I thought we had seen Homeward Bound or that Pixar animated movie, but I think we saw that online.
Yeah, so we saw something last February probably,
so it's been over a year that I've been in the movie theater.
It might have even been January, because like as soon as we found out about COVID, we were like kind of like what should we do?
So Street Gang, How We Got to Sesame Street, is a documentary based on Michael Davis's book Street Gang, the creation of Sesame Street, which we famously did a podcast with Michael in 2009, 4 years about before the Kevin Clash Elmo scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't talk about that with him, but we went really in deep talking about everything queer and everything that, you know, Sesame Street changed the way we see our lives, our identities, diversity, children. It really like helped push American society to be more progressive. And, you know, to have discussions on racism in the first place.
And just, you know, to give kids, especially kids in the inner cities, that head start, you know, because kids were just watching mindless television. Like, hey, let's teach kids words and the alphabet and numbers, and learning that stuff very early on is super important. And in the documentary, they even say if a child is watching that show with an adult, and then the adult can reference some of those things or talk about those things with the child, it improves their memory and their retention, and they're learning so much more.
And, you know, so like I'm obviously we're very influenced by Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Sesame Street on this podcast. And, you know, in a lot of ways, what we do on the podcast is sort of continue those ideas.
We're children of that.
Yeah. We're, you know, you never stop being a child. You just grow bigger, but there, you still have the emotional needs of uncertainty, the needs to connect to people, the needs to talk about your feelings, the need to be loved and to give love. And, you know, that's what we try to do here on the podcast Feast of Fun, is to talk about that with a humorous bent for adults, with, you know, LGBTQ identity and sensibility front and center. And so for me, it was really great to see a lot of behind the scenes footage on how that show was made and sort of the playful nature of them, especially the relationship between Jim Henson and Frank Oz. Mm-hmm. You know, they're a lot like you and I in a lot of ways, but not gay or married, but their wives were saying, like, you know, my husband would leave the house and be with Jim Henson or Frank Oz 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's they'd like, be gone for 4 days. They come back like it was nothing.
Like they describe Sesame Street as the other child in the family, but it was, you know, or the other mistress. And, you know, with Jim Henson, he did have mistresses. The most famously was Daryl Hannah. So
it's because who was Janice was his Muppet. And she was like a female version of Janice. So,
yeah, like really,
except he didn't really operate her with the arm. It was, you know,
so anyway, the Street Gang, fantastic film
in theaters.
Now we went to see it. It does not talk anything about the gay puppeteer. Richard Hunt, who did Harry Monster, who died of AIDS. That was a missed opportunity because certainly the book goes in deep in that.
Right.
It does not talk about how Barney almost destroyed Sesame Street. Yeah.
And it doesn't talk about how Jim Henson wanted the Muppets to kind of go in their own direction commercially and then have some of the other puppets stay with Sesame Street. And so in his mind, he had a clear delineation between the two of them. But Kermit was kind of like the special little frog that spanned both worlds, right? So he's still a part of Sesame Street and still part of the commercial world.
There's another Muppet that spanned both worlds. Do you know who that is? Rolf.
Rolf
predates everything. He was he was really the first fully formed Muppet that before Kermit was kind of a proto Muppet, you know? And like, he was not necessarily a frog. He was just a little creature. And Rolf was a dog who went by the name of Ralph and was on the Jimmy Dean show and, made appearances in everything. And, yeah, a lot of people don't know about that, but, you know, In terms of the documentary, there was a Kickstarter, a crowdfunding campaign for them to animate a lot of stills to create to do a lot more with it. And it looks like, I don't know if they were successful with their fundraising efforts. There was also discussion that Children's Television Workshop, which became Sesame's Workshop, was going to do a behind the scenes documentary of their own, and that never happened. So it's really great that Street Gang actually got some of this project done, because, you know, a lot of these things just sit in vaults and they crumble into the sands of time. So
you have to find somebody with passion to pursue these kinds of things. How many times did you cry during this movie?
A lot, actually, you know. And part of it is, you know, like I'm feeling older, and it's like our mothers are getting very sick, and, you know, they're having medical issues, and it's like, you know, this pandemic has been very lonely, and I feel like the whole world has aged so much in this past year, and it's been mentally and physically very stressful on everybody, including myself. And, you know, people are doing anything it takes to survive, to be happy, to connect, to stay connected, not just to each other, but to their authentic selves.
Right.
Like, you know, in a lot of ways I describe, like, the best part of me is you.
Aw, that's true.
And by that I mean is that, you know, my consciousness, when you're married to somebody, when you live with somebody for so long, part of your consciousness lives in that other person. And so when that person is away or gone, you not fully feel like your complete self. Now, some people may describe that as codependent, but that's just the nature of love and the nature of family and relationships. And, you know, so in terms of seeing this, it reminded me of all the love that I've received by so many amazing people, and they are no longer with us. and how that love lives in me and it lives in you and the listeners of the show. And it's really great to be able to, you know, it's a real honor for me personally to be able to do this podcast. 16 years, 3,000 shows coming around the corner. It's a thrill, you know, and, you know, Sesame Street in some ways has become just another kids TV show. It's on HBO now and it does air on public television stations, but it was not this kind of, now it is a very established program designed to educate children. And it was not this like pioneering, groundbreaking, progressive vehicle that it was in the 1970s.
Right. Because we have a lot of options now. We've learned a lot more about education. So,
and you know, so in a lot of ways, it's like, that's why we do this podcast, is because we're hoping to educate ourselves to move the world forward, to be more progressive.
And to create a community, because I think about our the listeners, you know, it's an audience, but it's also a community. It's people have met each other through the podcast and have married each other. Have they become friends and bonded over it?
You know? Yeah, it really is to me. Like, I'm very moved when people are like, I'm getting married. And I'm like, weren't you like 12 years old last year? You know, so it really, and when people share those photos with us, it's really heartwarming.
Yeah.
And Street Gang, you know, in Sesame Street, one thing that I discovered in this documentary is how much the Muppets remind, especially the Muppet monsters, remind me of dogs, our dog, Jesse.
Oh,
so, you know, like Jesse, when he whines or begs or pleads, there's a quality of him like Grover. And when he's like, you know, scarfing down on food,
he's Cookie Monster.
There's a lot of like animal qualities to these Muppets. And in a lot of ways, there's a lot of wisdom that the puppeteers had, that Jim Henson and all those creators, Josh Stone and everybody else, Fran Brill, who brought these, you know, the relationships they had with the animals and the children in their lives and brought them into the world to see. So it has great behind the scenes footage. Definitely check it out.
Yeah, definitely check it out. Well, it's interesting, you know, Caitlyn Jenner's always been interested in politics, right?
She's a Republican.
Because she really thought that Donald Trump was really going to be great for transgender people.
Why would she think that?
Wishful thinking, because, you know, Republicans live in their own world sometimes. And so she's decided she's going to run for governor of California. And her promotion pick, it's her in a car with a dog.
With
right?
a dog.
And she's looking at the dog while she's driving and people are like, you're known for hitting somebody in a car and killing them. Is this what you want? But then people are like, well, she is a Republican and that's what they run on.
Buckle up, buckaroos. We're going. Yeah, that's from South Park.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They did a parody of her. You know, South Park did it. Basically, yeah. I think she runs for political office in South Park.
Oh, gosh. No, really?
If I'm not aware, but they definitely parodied her, like, so, running people over, you
know,
with her car.
And, of course, you know, the media kind of wants to be like, oh, she's running and, like, and make kind of a big deal out of it. But every queer person is just like, no, we don't need her. And any person that has any kind of interest in politics or knowledge of politics would describe Caitlyn Jenner as deeply unqualified. She's not somebody that has any business running. You know, what is California? Is California the fifth, sixth largest economy in the world? Maybe the top 10. It's, you know, it's a bigger economy than like half of South America.
Yeah, and I never understand sort of this perspective
that people have
when they want to be president or the governor. It's like, yeah. I'm like, if you're interested in politics, why don't you, like, you know, town volunteer council. At a library?
Town council.
Something. You know? Be part of your condo association board, you know? It's like, like, what is it about certain people that they want to get the highest office they can when they first run? And, you know, with Caitlyn Jenner, it's like, I think, you know, a lot of LGBTQ people know how rotten and harmful she is, but people outside our scene or community, they don't know. They're like, well, would it be great to have a transgender person?
Caitlyn Jenner.
I'm like, no, not everybody is the same. We're not a monolith.
Right.
And I kind of describe Caitlyn Jenner as kind of like a person who came out as LGBTQ because of the internet. She's never really had relationships with other transgender people or other transgender women
that we're aware of, but they did say like in her she had
reality
in her reality. She did try to transition in the 90s, but then kind of pulled back because of fear, you know.
And she has a lot of money. She also at one point in time was a celebrated Olympic athlete. And I think a lot of these people have this idea that I did it all by myself, you know. Mm-hmm. Buckaroos. And
what is the buckaroos thing?
That's what they say on South Park. Buckle up, buckaroos. And then she runs somebody over. And, you know, so I run into some people, they like have no connection to a community. They don't understand the impacts of their conservative views mm-hmm. or regressive views. And they're like, I came out all by myself. So why do we need any of this stuff? Why basically like LGBTQ equality mm-hmm. by your own bootstraps.
I was born wealthy. Why isn't everybody else born wealthy?
Well, you know, and she has accomplished some amazing things yes. in her life, but she didn't do it by herself. She did it, you know, with amazing training and amazing equipment.
Support.
Yeah. It's like, right. I think it's really interesting. Like a lot of these athletes, they just think they invented their sport, or they excelled at it all by themselves. Mm. They're like, and you know, a lot of these Instagram fitness models, they're all like, I geared to my gym and lifted those weights all by myself. I'm like, pretty much there was somebody opening the doors at the gym for you and cleaning up after you. You know, there's a staff. There was a personal trainer that you worked with. You have a training coach, probably. You didn't just do it by yourself. Mm-hmm. You learned from somebody else. And, you know, that's learning is love.
Yeah.
The day sure. you stop learning is the day you start dying. That's what my sister says.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. And if you have this attitude that you know everything or that you basically can figure out anything, sometimes you can't figure out things.
Yeah. Sometimes you need to ask an expert.
Or just say, like, I don't know the solution, but we can together find some solution. Mm-hmm. That's a really hard concept for people to grasp. And a lot of these regressive people, like Caitlyn Jenner, have this like lack of knowledge is very frightening to her. And part of it is like, you know, her resistance to coming out and transitioning is about control. It's about control of her body and her comfort levels. And, you know, listen, we know from a firsthand experience that coming out of the closet is terrifying and difficult and emotionally stressful and dangerous for some people. But at the same time, it's like, you know, Caitlyn Jenner took a long time to come out because she wanted to hold on to that male privilege that she had. And so as a person who has a lot of very narrow-minded views about community, about equality, she would be a terrible, terrible, terrible politician for California.
Yeah, she'd be like, we don't need those social services. They can do it on their own. I did it on my own.
So all these drag queens from RuPaul's Drag Race, like Pandora Box, are like, I'm running for governor of California. And I'm like, maybe, please don't.
Aren't you still a resident of New York?
Yeah, Pandora Box says she's going to run. So I asked her, like, well, have you filed papers? Yeah. Have you created a website? And she's like, not responding.
She did not return comment.
There's an announcement that dick sizes, penis, but taints, the space between your balls and your anus is shrinking. Your genital areas are shrinking and could be a sign of worse things to come.
Are they shrinking in babies in utero, like newborn kids growing up, or as you get older, it's shrinking? Like what happens there? Because they're blaming on these phthalates, right? Is that how, am I saying it right? And with the phthalates that come in like a lot of plastic things that we use, it's kind of messing up with our endocrine system. Because, you know, I think that they say like penis size sometimes is related to testosterone surges and when you're younger. And so if you have a lower testosterone, your penis doesn't grow as big.
So there's a study published back in 2005 that linked phthalates, which is chemicals widely used in plastics, toys, detergents, nail polish, soaps, and more, to physical changes in women's bodies, and conversely to their male children. And I'm sure this is affecting everybody, not just boys. It's just the penis is on the outside, and so can be more observed, you know.
Well, the other thing too, like one of the criticisms of this study though is just like how were they studying penises in the past?
The same way you all do, honey. So those boys that were born
on my forearm.
Those boys that were born to mothers with higher concentrations of these phthalates in their bodies were more likely to have a smaller penis size at their 12-month checkup, which doctors measure and have been measuring for a long time, and testicles that hadn't fully descended. Mm. Additional research has found the same results. Also, sperm counts, testosterone levels, and other endocrine issues are putting everybody at risk, including women, because women's bodies also have testosterone too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, something that is going to be a major, you know, environmental crisis. It's going to be a major issue of our time. When we think about the environment, we think about, you know, climate change or recycling. We don't think about our dicks
or
sex lives or women, you know, women being horny or men being horny or non-binary people having healthy attitudes about their sexuality and their bodies. And the environment shapes that, you know. So the fact that this is like a consequence, one visible consequence of how much toxins we have in our environment and how it's affecting us hormonally is something for pause and certainly something, you know, listen, honey, I'm like Mae West. We got to fight for these big dicks. Come on. If that's not going to get people, you know, because Bill Nye's Earth Day, the musical, only going to, and Zac Efron's face is going to only go so far.
I am a big fan of big dicks, but I also, I'm not a fan of people, like, shaming people for the size of their penis. Because it's something, you know, you can't change, and there's, you know, penises come in all different sizes. Some people like whatever size penis is out there.
And, you know, I appreciate beauty in all sizes. Mm-hmm. And so there's this one photo, that this illustration of, like, from skinny to, like, very thick.
Mm-hmm.
Muscularity versus, you know, lots of curves,
big pecs, baby with the belly, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's being, and then people are like, which body do you prefer? And I'm like, I like all of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're great illustrations.
Yeah. It depends on what else is
attached. And there's, of course, people are like, my body's not in there. And that's like, okay, let's see your shirtless photo. I'm like, I think you're pretty much a nine there in that, you know? So part of it is like, self-image and self-worth and, you know, self-esteem issues are all kind of like coming head to head with this idea of like that we don't like how we look and therefore we don't love ourselves because we don't like how we look.
Speaking of penises, Prince Harry, he's the chief impact officer for a mental health startup in California. And I guess people in Japan are kind of laughing because like his title, like abbreviation chimpo is slang is penis in Japanese.
Chimpo.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, God, I remember when Prince Harry was, you know, the playboy who used to party hard in Las Vegas
naked, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't there photos of him like half naked
and you know, like getting like people thought Prince Harry was gay for a while, you know?
Hey, listen, he was in the military, right?
Well, you know, it's
what
like
when, in the military
when you're on a lot of cocaine and champagne in Las Vegas, a hole is a hole.
So one of your favorite people, Kit Shapiro, Eartha Kitt's daughter, has a book out.
Yeah. So she's announced it on her tweet. But just like Eartha, it's probably like a rewrite of another book. But she has it in quotations, a new book. Eartha and Kit, A Daughter's Love Story. It's her heartfelt memoir of her life with her legendary mom. And the book is going to be shipping May 3rd of this year, and it's out by Pegasus Books. And, you know, part of it is like, I thought it was kind of funny because it's like her mommy dearest book. So everybody's buying it, trying to be like, let's see what a terrible mother Eartha Kit was. It's like, Eartha was a great mom. I was like, all right. That's not going to sell.
Talking to her on the podcast before about growing up as Eartha Kitt's daughter, you know, she did love her mom very much. But I think that there was some times that she said it was kind of challenging, right? Because didn't her mother like take her everywhere and it was kind of hard to be on the road as a kid?
It's hard to be a child of a successful or a struggling entertainer. And, you know, like a lot of people don't realize that these celebrities are always on airplanes and hotels and moving around and showing up to one function or another and stuff. You know?
So you're always moving. You're always tired. And, you know, I think it was awkward for her because her mother was black and she presented as white. And so people were just kind of like, what's going on here?
And they always. Yeah. And you know, when you don't visually match your parents, especially in a because of race or in a racist world, that's going to cause, you know, a lot of uncertainty and a lot of stress for the family. And so, you know, I think, you know, she certainly talked a lot about that on her podcast, and I guess she's going to expand on it more.
Well, look forward to reading it.
Yeah. It's not going to have like, you know, she made me eat a raw piece of meat.
It was so weird how I had to bring her the axe at midnight.
Yeah. To chop down the pear tree. But part of it is like, you know, like that Mommy Dearest book was such a scandalous book. And it shocked like the world. It was kind of like the first celebrity child's book who popped the bubble on this perfect, pristine image.
Well, especially because it was that golden era of Hollywood where it was just like almost impenetrable. Like the studios controlled the press. They controlled their lives. The image, it was just, and then this book came and just shattered all of that. Of course, that studio system had been dead already probably, you know, almost 30 years, but.
Oh, one thing about the Sesame Street Gang documentary is that Eartha Kitt makes a brief appearance in it.
I didn't see her in it.
Yeah, the original Gordon, he was a talk show host on local television, and one of his famous guests was Eartha Kitt.
I had no idea.
So there's a Sesame Street connection to Eartha Kitt.
The original Gordon, he had a show. It wasn't, what was it called? Like Black Presence, or it wasn't called Black Power, but it was basically a black focused talk show in the Philadelphia market, and yeah, he became the original Gordon and played it for a while. But then he had played a character that they thought was too much of a stereotype. So they had to retire it. And eventually he just kind of became he's like, I don't want to do this anymore.
It wasn't his character that it was. He created a Muppet called Roosevelt Franklin.
Yeah.
And he did the voice for that Muppet. And at the time it was not well received by black audiences because they felt like it was too hip.
Yeah.
And you know, Matt Robinson, the original Gordon, his original career was as a talk show host. And he did, you know, many different things, projects, but it was great to see that footage of Eartha Kitt with the original Gordon.
Aww.
And I was like, it was perfect. Remember folks, Feast of Fun is made possible because of fierce, fabulous people just like you. Consider becoming a member and listen to thousands of legendary shows at feastoffun.com/plus.
Join us at Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun for an ad-free experience.
That's right, honeys. What do you think? Should Mark and I get, like, you know, filler like Zac Efron?
So what I'm going to get done eventually is get a little more Botox, and then I have a little dent in my forehead that is from a scar from a child. I think I'll get a little filler in there.
If you just put a suction cup on your forehead and just pull it out, like a car.
And then I'm going to get a little bit of lip plumping.
I'm going to get pectoral and butt implants.
Oh, wow.
I'll look like T.S. Madison and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Curves, baby.
You need 9 inches.
22 inches, honey. Because if you're not wearing 22 inches, you're practically bald.
Oh, yes. Can't wait for season 2 of the T.S. Madison Experience.
Yes, darling. Live your best life. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye-bye.